The following is a special bonus episode from our Patreon. For more great content like this, head on over to patreon.com/thesuperswitchclub to join today and help to keep this show going. With the upcoming release of the new Super Mario Bros. Movie, we here at the Super Switch Club decided to do a bonus review on 2017's Super Mario Odyssey for the Nintendo Switch.
Hi, I'm Bill, and I absolutely love old video games, but I didn't have anyone to play with, so I decided to start the Super Switch Club.
That's right,
a podcast dedicated to discussing and reliving the nostalgia of retro video games that are also on the Nintendo Online Virtual Library.
Hello, Douglas Gale here, co-host of the Game Pass podcast, Game Pass.
Hey folks, this is Brett from Skeleton House.
This is Eric Slater from Epic Tales of History, Too Young for This Trek, and Podcasters Assemble.
This is Ben from Dragoon Effect.
Hey everyone, it is Caslo25. I'm a YouTuber and Twitch streamer, and we are here for a special presentation of the Super Switch Club.
That's right. It's our first official Nintendo Switch game.
In anticipation of the Mario movie releasing in, I guess, the day that this episode's supposed to release.
I'm here to talk about Super Mario Odyssey.
Here to talk about Super Mario Odyssey!
Here we go! Oddly enough, this is actually our first Mario game on this podcast, 4 seasons in.
I kind of ran out of time to get this submission in, so it's going to be very short.
So like I said, we're talking about Mario Odyssey.
Any oozle, yes, Super Mario Odyssey.
Odyssey is amazing. I like it a lot.
Super Mario Odyssey is the latest in a long line of 3D Mario platformers. Every Nintendo system has debuted with a Mario title, and of course, the Switch was no different.
And my memories with Mario Odyssey, I remember it released the day before my wedding. I remember that morning getting up, trying to help set up our venue, and then afterwards running to Best Buy to pick this up so I could play it at the hotel the next day while waiting for the ceremony to come up.
My wife and I have played it together co-op 2 or 3 times to 100%.
Obviously, I didn't get a ton played that weekend, but a couple weeks later, when we went on our honeymoon, I got to play it by the pool while my wife was out floating around our swim-up pool at our resort while she was reading. And I was just sitting there playing Mario Odyssey. It was actually a lot of fun. It was a nice relaxing break every other day between all our excursions and drinking by the pool. Just something that I could relax with while she was reading.
This is maybe the second or third Mario game that I'd ever played.
When it comes to Mario games, there's really 2 types of games. Well, like 5 or 6 if you count Dr. Mario, Mario Kart, and or all the sports games, like Mario Golf, Mario Tennis, and Mario Soccer.
I think I had played Super Mario Brothers at some point in time when I was younger. Didn't care for it. I don't even think I got past the first couple levels.
Oh, then there's the Paper Mario games, which are RPGs. Not to mention Super Smash Brothers and the original Donkey Kong.
I guess I'd play Donkey Kong, but what the fuck? We're gonna call that, I guess, technically, yes, but I'm not counting Donkey Kong.
And Wrecking Crew. But my point is, when it comes to actual Super Mario games, you've got your classic 2D side-scrollers, which were the standard from the NES and Game Boy to the Super Nintendo, like Super Mario Bros. 3 and Super Mario World. And then, of course, there's the 3D platformers, which all began with Super Mario 64 on the Nintendo 64, which set the standard for 3D video games for years to come, and pretty much every new Mario game since has been a continuation of that style, with increasingly better graphics.
But for me, this is probably gonna be different than a lot of the other people. This was actually my first 3D Mario since Mario 64. Since I skipped the GameCube and the Wii, and then the Wii U really didn't have a 3D Mario, I actually never got to play a 3D Mario after Mario 64.
Super Mario 64 was followed up by Luigi's Mansion and the equally divisive Super Mario Sunshine for the GameCube. Next were the Super Mario Galaxy games.
And then I played Galaxy on something? Was that on the Wii or a GameCube?
It was on the Wii.
Can't remember, but it was a 3D Mario game, and I enjoyed that. I really liked it.
And now we have Super Mario Odyssey.
Yeah, then I had a Switch, and I got Super Mario Odyssey, and I loved it.
Now, as some of you probably know, if you've talked to me on the Discord, I'm a huge fan of old-school Mario games. I grew up with the Super Nintendo, and my two favorite games were Super Mario World and Super Mario All-Stars, which was basically just a revamped collection of the original 8-bit classics.
I have finished this game before. I wrote it down here. I had gotten up to 826 moons on my first playthrough of this game a couple years ago. And then, yeah, for this podcast, I went ahead and burned through it a little quicker this time. Got 149 moons on this most recent playthrough.
Now, I really dig the newer 3D Mario games, but to me, the 2D ones are where it's at. Maybe it's just because I suck at spatial awareness in day-to-day life. I don't know.
Let's get to what everybody's waiting for. Let's get to the game itself.
So, yeah, let's see. What is this game? Super Mario Odyssey.
When I first started Mario Odyssey, I was a bit caught off guard by a few things.
It's the story of a foppish turtle dragon dandy and a short guy fighting over a woman, it seems.
First, Princess Peach is captured by Bowser again. You're traveling the world in an airship collecting moons in order to stop Peach and Bowser's wedding?
And the game starts off with Bowser defeating Mario up on his airship above Peach's castle.
The game starts off where the well-dressed dragon dandy throws his hat like Oddjob style, knocking Mario off the flying boat where it looks like he plummets to his death.
And Bowser is all dressed all dapper. Bowser's got this white top hat that he uses to knock Mario away, and Mario goes flying off into the distance.
I mean, in my headcanon, he just dies there, and then the rest of the game is him and his ghost hat going around possessing people and things against their will, but, you know, that's kind of a dark read. It's already dark enough, the whole, like, kidnapped woman forced marriage thing. Like, let's not...
Wow, they definitely made some choices in this one.
And then there's a big scene where Bowser crushes Mario's hat. So we learned pretty early that the theme of this game is hats.
And the main gimmick in this game is that Mario's hat is a character named Cappy, who you can use to possess random characters.
But then Mario's shredded cap is falling away, and it gets shredded up in the propeller of Bowser's airship, where it's caught by a little ghost hat that picks it up and just looks at it.
I should be adding extra darkness to what is on the surface already pretty dark, so fine. Mario apparently can fall from a great height and live, because I don't think Mario's human. I think he's some sort of little goblin creature.
Then everything fades out, and we switch to Mario, who has crash-landed in the Cap Kingdom.
Anyways, yeah, he does not die, but he wakes up in some sort of hat-themed limbo underworld, where there's, like, hat ghosts or ghosts of hats.
Which is the kind of tutorial level, or at least one of the two tutorial levels for this game, and you meet Cappy, who was the ghost that found Mario's hat.
Now, I will say Cappy isn't as annoying as, like, from Skyward Sword.
They seem to be kind of like a race of hat-like ghost beings. Actually, Princess Toadstool's tiara in the opening scene was apparently Cappy's, like, either sister or girlfriend. I can't really remember which. I don't know if they actually even say. It's just somebody special to Cappy, at least.
And, yeah, then he becomes friends with a hat or a ghost of a hat, and then they can possess people. That's the game. Goodbye. Thanks for listening.
They definitely made some choices in this one.
But the possession thing is strange.
But Cappy turns himself into Mario's hat, which introduces us to the gimmick of this game, which is you can throw Cappy around and interact with enemies or objects in the environment.
Like one of the One of the first thing they have you possess is a frog.
For instance, you can throw it to activate a question mark block or break a brick block or possess another animal.
And then you enter some sort of cosmic liminal space while you're going into the frog, and then you become... No, you don't become the frog. The frog is still the frog. Your mustache appears on the frog. Your body disappears, so it's just... Like, what are you? You are dead. I'm sorry. I take it back. You are some sort of spirit being, or you have managed to transform your entire body into some sort of non-corporeal thing where you possess the frog.
In this first stage, you actually can possess a little bitty green frog.
Also, quick side note, I love becoming a frog in this game.
Which allows Mario to jump super high as the frog and navigate part of the stage.
Frog Mario is the best. like, you can jump extremely high, and usually Mario can jump pretty high, but like, it's like 10 times that. But when you become a frog on the moon, it's absurd how high you can jump.
And then after you leave, the frog dies. It like explodes. It pops. That's just... Okay. I keep saying that I'm not going to make it dark, but damn, this game does that for you. But not always. I mean, I guess you can possess inanimate objects, which... Oof, what are we doing here? What are we doing here?
It's a lot of fun to be Cappy.
I have a lot of mixed feelings on the taking over sentient creatures aspect.
What did I like? I like the little turd monsters where you knock their hats off and you jump on them and then you build little turd tower stacks out of them. I thought that was pretty fun.
Well, it was kind of cute to see Mario as a Goomba with a mustache, and some of those characters were really fun to control.
It's just kind of, there's a couple times with the mechanics that are cute where you get to build a little turd tower tall enough to go flirt with like the turd monster lady.
If I remember right, there was like, you could possess like stacks of Goombas because they'd all stack up on one another to kind of reach different heights and things.
That was pretty fun.
It also became extremely annoying at times because you basically have to, you know, learn a whole new moveset each time, and a lot of them are required to move forward in the game.
Then, as we work our way through the Cap Kingdom, we're introduced to the boss baddies for the game, which are all these big anthropomorphic, I guess is the best term for it, rabbits or bunnies that are all wearing fancy hats of some sort.
Another thing that really kind of bothered me was the Brutals and those repetitious boss fights.
And you have to defeat each one of them. If I remember right, it's kind of at the end of every single kingdom.
I mean, they were okay, but really not my favorite.
We collect a power moon, and then there's a leftover little, like, electrical circuit there. So we can throw Cappy onto it, and we zoom away as a little spark of electricity off into the distance, where we arrive in the Cascade Kingdom, which is the closest thing to, like, a true level we get at the beginning, even though it's very, very short and very tutorial. Now, as I said, when we defeated the bunny, we got a moon. Here we're introduced more to these power moons.
Anywho, there's a lot to love in this game. The graphics are outstanding, because of course they are.
We also learn about purple coins, which, if I remember correctly, you can use at a cap shop to get different outfits for Mario. And there's a ton of great outfits.
I really enjoy some of Mario's customizable outfits that you can unlock.
You've got your like Luigi's, your Wario's, your Waluigi's that you can put on. You can turn yourself into a skeleton. You can get a swimsuit, which made the internet go crazy when it went off because you get to see a topless Mario who has nipples. And for some reason, the internet loved that.
Like Pirate Mario, Mafia Mario, Dr. Mario, Samurai Mario, and Mexican Mario.
However, there are some outfits that could be kind of problematic. For instance, the Sand Kingdom, which I think is the next stage we go to, has a like very stereotypical like Mexican flair to it. It's got a big poncho and a big sombrero. And I don't know, I felt a little like this isn't quite PC for even like 2017.
I also kind of enjoyed the wedding theme to an extent, except, you know, that the whole thing seems wildly unethical since, you know, Peach was taken against her will. Consent matters, Bowser. Consent matters.
The one thing this game is missing, though, is like DLC where you go get like a garter belt for the wedding. Because you got a ring, you got the cake, you got the wedding dress, you got the flower bouquet. You never had to track down a garter belt. Man, what an oversight.
Another thing we find in the Cascade Kingdom is something that's pretty consistent throughout the game. You can go through a warp pipe and you're in what is essentially an old NES, actually the original Super Mario Brothers style of level with retro sprites put up onto like the wall of like a mountain or something, and you work your way through it. Those were a lot of fun and a great throwback because I remember playing those original Mario style levels back on the NES.
The levels are really interesting, and there's a bunch of levels.
All of the worlds are just fun to be had.
There's Cap Kingdom, which is all limbo, hat limbo, and ghosts. And then Mars, I think, is you go there.
Another great thing about this one is that each kingdom comes with its own brochure, which is a really clever way to do a map system. For instance, for the Mushroom Kingdom, it lists industries as pipes and tourism. That tracks.
But back to the Cascade Kingdom. As I was saying, we collect these power moons. They're used to power up this airship that's obviously shaped like a hat that we find inside the Cascade Kingdom. And you need to get so many power moons before you can unlock more stages.
And then the dinosaur park. The Cascade Kingdom is a jungle with a dinosaur.
I enjoyed exploring most of the worlds or kingdoms, especially that Jurassic Park one.
Now, as we're going through the Cascade Kingdom, we actually get what I think is the greatest possession instance in the game, which is you get to possess with Cappy a T-Rex.
Where you can literally become a T-Rex. That was kind of amazing.
You can possess a dinosaur and that doesn't disappear.
And it's like a realistic looking T-Rex, like straight out of Jurassic Park. It isn't cartoony like Yoshi ends up being. It is just straight up realistic T-Rex.
That dinosaur is pretty fun though. You just go around smashing shit as a dinosaur.
And you just thrash through the stage, destroying bricks and huge boulders to unlock different parts of the stage.
That's pretty tight.
So the rest of the level, we just kind of explore. We fight another rabbit baddie boss, collect some more power rooms, and it's off to the next kingdom. And that's effectively the game gameplay loop of the game. You travel to different kingdoms and collect moons to travel to even more kingdoms. Every once in a while, you might face off against Bowser. Because of that, I think it's better I just comment on certain things that stood out to me throughout the kingdoms, as they're all largely pretty similar in concept, as it's just solving puzzles or defeating certain bosses.
You can possess zippers and unzip walls in the undersea level because, sure, zippers, undersea level. Those match up. I guess this is related to something I was saying about Banjo, where that's like nonsense in Mario, right? The things that happen in Mario are just patently absurd.
Thank you so much for playing my game.
4 years, the best podcasters from around the world have gathered to review, reminisce, and riff on popular franchises. They've assembled the Earth's mightiest superheroes. Traveled to a galaxy far, far away. Drank many martinis, shaken, not stirred. Witnessed the battle of the Alpha Titan. Defended Earthrealm from Outworld.
Get over here!
Busted their fair share of ghosts. Unplugged from the Matrix.
I know Kung Fu.
Kept a watchful eye on Gotham City. Discovered the secrets of Jurassic Park and other audio adventures. But there were some movies that didn't make the cut. From the creators of Podcasters Assemble comes a movie hype series hosted by a motley crew of talent. Podcasters Disassemble. Podcasters Assemble is a production of the We Can Make This Work, Probably, Podcast Network.
Hey everyone, just wanted to give a quick shout out to our patrons on Patreon, including Caslo25, Elise from Australia, Brett from Skeleton House, and Ben from Dragoon Effect. Once again, if you'd like to help keep this show going, you can support us at patreon.com/thesuperswitchclub. Link in the show notes.
but it's such a fucking fun game. Who cares? I don't care. I don't care that this premise is nonsense. I don't care that you're some sort of, you know, vengeful spirit with an angry hat going around murdering innocent people in your quest to rescue this woman from the evil, foppish dandy dragon. I don't care that none of that makes any sense, because it's goddamn fun every second of the way.
I didn't love the food-themed kingdom. I'm not entirely sure why. It just feels like, I don't know, especially coming from New Donk City, which we'll get to. That's a whole thing. It felt like maybe this should have been like a bonus unlockable world. Maybe it was a suspension of disbelief thing for me. Like, all that food seemed like a giant waste. I don't know. You know, I really enjoyed Cooking Mama, and I'm a stay-at-home house husband who shops, meal plans, and makes elaborate home-cooked meals all the time, so you would think that level would maybe speak to me or something, but it just felt lazy, I guess. Like they're running out of ideas. Maybe, you know, if it was like inside a giant kitchen, I could see like Mario getting shrunken down or something and then having to navigate a kitchen as the world. Plus that would fit, you know, because there was that one world in the older games with the massive Goombas and everything was really big and we were small. I don't know. I'm just rambling.
Let's see. The Ruined Kingdom, one of the times where you crash your ship, you fight what is effectively like a Elden Ring boss, a giant lightning dragon. That's pretty sweet.
But each of the stages has kind of a classic theme. You've got a sand level, a water level, a snow level.
There's a couple different water levels, because why not? A Cloud Kingdom.
Bowser's Kingdom, which had a very like ancient Chinese golden dragon theme to it.
You get to go to Bowser's land. Is Bowser royalty? Like, he has a castle. Are we invading the sovereign territory of Bowser? Is the whole marriage between him and Peach some sort of like political Game of Thrones bullshit? Someone who knows Mario lore, tell me.
There's a couple worlds that felt a little generic at times, and gathering some of the moons was a bit tedious. However, compared to Banjo-Kazooie, Mario Odyssey really proves that we've come a long way with the collectathon games. Banjo may have started the trend, but Odyssey definitely refined it.
And then what ended up being kind of the best level.
And then this, oh boy, the city. The city.
New Donk City.
So yeah, we really need to talk about Pauline and New Donk City.
New Donk City.
New Donk City?
Jesus f***ing Christ, what a name.
New Donk City.
New Donk City.
Who would name a city that?
That's probably one of the best names for a level that anyone has ever come up with.
Really?
New Donk City.
What does that even mean?
That's just amazing.
New Donk City looks basically like New York City.
I guess it's kind of grown on me the past couple years, but the first time I saw that, my wife and I just burst out laughing.
And Pauline is here.
And I'm led to believe in Mario lore that your ex-girlfriend, maybe, Pauline, is the mayor.
If you don't know who Pauline is, Pauline is the girl that you rescue in the original Donkey Kong games. But here she's the mayor of New York City, of New Donk City.
Anywho, the name aside, this level's pretty clever because of the whole OG Donkey Kong connection.
It's not, I don't think, obvious in the game, but I have since found out that she's the woman that you're rescuing from Donkey Kong in the original Mario entry. New Donk City, Donkey Kong, right? It all ties together here.
At some point during the level, you enter what I would like to call the finale of New Donk City, where they're putting up a full-on concert to the song Jump Up Superstar, which I'm sure we're going to be playing in here. It is the Mario Odyssey theme song.
In fact, that 8-bit minigame during the song might be my favorite part of the entire game.
And it's such a good song.
Yeah, so after you do some stuff in this level, they put on a party for you where they, I guess, make all of the buildings turn into 2D games for you to run around through.
While that's going on, you're going through Retropipes, doing all kinds of crazy 8-bit style levels, including where they turn you completely upside down and just messes with your mind through that.
And that's kind of, it's super fun. I mean, the whole song and everything, the whole song and dance, the whole routine is great. I mean, it's just, I'm not even nostalgic for these games because I have very minimal experience with the 2D Mario, but I f***ing love that. It felt great.
Oh, and in the middle of all those 8-bit sprite stuff, there's a classic Donkey Kong level with all the barrels rolling down and Mario jumping over, which is just great as somebody who grew up in the 80s.
You know, if I do good in a video game, I want the whole city to come out and give me a goddamn parade. That feels awesome. Feels really good.
And then you get to the end and you can dance with Pauline while she's singing Jump Up Superstar.
What's weird about it is that it seemed a little bit like Pauline having to relive the trauma of being kidnapped by Donkey Kong, because that featured very heavily in the finale of this. Although I guess you do re-defeat him, so. Are Mario and Donkey Kong friends in Mario lore? I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of Mario lore that I'm unfamiliar with.
And you've got realistic humans walking around.
It's also more than a little weird that Mario doesn't actually look like the normal citizens of New Donk City. Why? What is happening?
Speaking of Mario lore that I'm unfamiliar with, what? There's like humans in New Donk City who look like humans. Honestly, I don't even know what Mario is, but I guess maybe I'll get to that later.
And in this game, it really threw me off because there's actual people in the game, like actual real humans, you know, with regular proportions. But then there's Mario, who looks so cartoony that it just feels weird.
I don't think Mario's human. I think he's some sort of little goblin creature.
Like he's some kind of alien from another dimension. Like he isn't human.
You can even possess one of them and then control his little RC car. He doesn't die after you leave him, I guess, because he's better than a frog.
In New Donk City, you can use the scooter to make the jump rope moons a lot easier.
But if New Donk City is populated with humans, what the f*** are you? What is Mario? Is he human? I mean, he kind of is like a cartoon human? Or is he like a weird little goblin creature who can fall from a flying ship and not die? Is he a little goblin creature with a magic hat that lets him possess people? I don't know.
Other than that, though, I really do like the aesthetic of the cityscape.
It's just so much. I mean, it's a lot. There's a lot to talk about in this game for one episode, and I'm always pushing the limit to my submission, so I should probably wrap this up real quick.
But eventually you get through all those kingdoms and you chase Bowser all the way to the moon, where there is a church getting ready for Peach and Bowser's forced marriage.
And oh my god, you spend this whole game tracking down Peach to rescue her, I guess, and Mario strides off the Odyssey on the moon with a look straight up stolen from his rival. What a king.
And as weird as it was, I loved that the end of the game took place on the moon.
Moon Kingdom, probably my favorite. I love floating. I love floating.
Just the look of it, the feel of it.
Now, this level isn't too long to actually get to that church. And because it's the moon, the physics are completely different. You've got just low gravity, so you're jumping super high. It's a ton of fun to kind of navigate that area.
Those moon physics were so freaking cool.
Let me say that again. I love floating. It's one of my favorite mechanics in the game.
Makes it easy so you can jump up onto the church and find some more power moons up there.
Woo, so low gravity jumping, super high jumps, floating off. So great, so great.
Okay, now let's talk about that ending. Why is there a church on the moon? Yeah, it looks cool, but why?
But you can run into the church and you see all these different characters that you met throughout all the different stages, because each kingdom has their own like unique type of characters. For instance, the Sand Kingdom has characters with the skull face paint from, how do you pronounce it? I'm not going to try, but it's Day of the Dead, the day after Halloween. They've got that skull face paint on. But like I said, each stage has their own characters, and they're all forced here by Bowser to be at the church for his marriage to Peach.
I love this whole ending.
On the moon, there's a pretty fun level where you possess a football player who I believe is one of those Super Smash Brothers I'm always hearing about.
But you run up, you confront Bowser and Peach. Peach is happy to see you. And then Bowser opens a trapdoor, falls down, and you have a boss battle, the final boss battle against Bowser.
Bowser fight was really fun and just challenging enough. But what was really clever was the fact that it didn't end with the boss fight. They did something that really surprised me here. You actually become Bowser.
Then after you defeat Bowser finally, the stage begins to crumble and you, Peach, and Bowser all fall into like this molten center core of the moon. And Bowser's passed out and Peach is standing in there beside him. You run over, throw Cappy at Bowser, and possess Bowser to escape this crumbling molten core.
And this whole section where you're running as the place is collapsing is super clever.
Now, it's also super cute because then Peach jumps up onto Bowser's shoulder, or I guess Mario Bowser's shoulder, while you're kind of wrecking your way through all these boulders and bricks that are blocking your way. And ultimately, we make it back out to the moon's surface.
But then the game did something I didn't expect.
And it cuts to Bowser running up to Peach, holding out this like bouquet of piranha plant flowers, and then Mario coming in with like his flowers of his own, trying to like fight for the love of Peach.
They totally subverted all the tropes of the hero saving the princess, which was originally one of my big beefs with the game. You know, it's been done, you know?
And then in a real surprise, Peach just rejects them both.
And here's what surprised me though. Mario doesn't get the girl.
And runs off and steals Mario's airship.
What a power move that is.
It ends with, it's a very anime style ending kind of, but she's pissed at both of them for fighting over her. And it was kind of great because Mario and Bowser were kind of like consoling one another.
Which leads us into the credits and we arrive back in the Mushroom Kingdom to discover that Peach has set off on her own odyssey.
After you rescue Peach, there's even more game after that where she's just off going on adventures with your hat's girlfriend? I don't remember. Your hat has a girlfriend that's a tiara who's also a ghost. Who knows? This lore makes no sense, but it doesn't matter.
But yeah, Peach decides to head off on vacation.
To visit all the kingdoms of the game.
And in the end.
And you can actually go back to all the stages and find Peach in all of these different stages. And she's got unique outfits for as she's on vacation.
And I forget if that story goes anywhere, but I know you can find Peach if you bounce around the world here and there. She's off having her own adventures. That's pretty good. Good for you, Peach. Have your adventures.
I really want a Princess Peach game now. She hasn't been a playable character since, I want to say, Super Mario Bros. 2. It's overdue. She deserves her own game.
Odyssey is amazing.
But that's Mario Odyssey, and it was a ton of fun. I loved the old, I guess it's old at this time, but 3D Mario puzzle-solving stages.
Another cool thing about the end of this game, it's not over. Once you're done with the story, there's a lot more game to explore.
There's even more after-game stuff. If you keep collecting moons, there's like a boss run thing you can do, and then there's the, like, really, like, I was talking about the difficulty of the game. There's a section at the end of the game that is intended to be super hard because I don't know. I didn't get that far in it because, you know, I just wasn't in the mood for it.
And finally, if you haven't finished Darker Side of the Moon, you haven't finished Super Mario Odyssey.
There's like three more worlds to unlock, including the freaking Mushroom Kingdom.
I highly recommend it, and it should be considered required for beating it.
And yeah, so if you want to play the hard version of the game, you've got that. It's probably not what people would want if you wanted the whole game to be hard, but, you know, there's something for you at least.
I was having so much fun collecting all the stars around Peach's castle. It really kind of made me want an HD version of Mario 64 because they could really do so much more with just a back-to-basics Mario adventure with these kind of graphics.
And I feel a little bad that I missed out on Sunshine and Galaxy, I believe it was. But this one, from what I understand, is a lot closer to that Mario 64 formula, even if you do have the Cappy gimmick going on.
A clever touch was that when you approach the castle, you can hear the Super Mario 64 thing, but it sounds like it's echoing from a loudspeaker, like you're at Disneyland or something.
But the Cappy gimmick was a lot of fun. Getting to possess different animals and different Mario enemies to progress through stages or solve puzzles was a ton of fun.
And when you beat the game and go to Peach's Castle, you talk to a Toad that gives you a to-do list to get more moons. And the first thing after saving the princess is achieve world peace. I thought that was hilarious. But funny enough, I apparently did almost everything on the list because it took me several minutes just to click through all the moon achievement messages.
I don't know. I guess, yeah. Game's great. Love it. Love it. Love it.
All in all, there were parts of the game that really dragged for me, but towards the end, it really picked up, and that ending surprised the hell out of me.
Yeah, it was a ton of fun. If you haven't played Mario Odyssey, go out and do it.
It had a surprising amount of replay value going back through and trying to find some of the hidden secrets.
I think the only complaint that I could level against this game is it's probably too easy, which is, for me, I'm fine with that. Like, if this game was harder, if this game was like a really hard platformer, I would still absolutely enjoy it. I would just play it differently. Right now, when I play Mario, it's kind of like a chill vibes background game almost. Like, I have done a lot of podcast editing while playing Mario because you can play and barely be paying attention. I'm not saying that that means that the game is good. I'm just saying that the easiness of it doesn't bother me because I will just play it a certain way, you know? Like Elden Ring or Dark Souls, those are the go-tos for hard games. I play those games and I enjoy those games, but I don't edit podcasts while I'm playing them. But I guess that's neither here nor there. I'm saying that difficulty doesn't make or break it for a game. It just has to feel fun. And, you know, this is a modern game with modern controls. It feels fun. It's very tight. There's a lot of little things in there that are fun. I don't, maybe it's buggy and glitchy as shit. I don't know. I never ran into any problems with that. It rewards exploration, which is something that I really enjoy in a platforming game.
Odyssey is amazing.
Game's a 10 out of 10.
Highly recommend it.
Brilliant. Hats off. Literally and metaphorically.
Okay, that's all I got. See you guys later. Bye.
I still kind of wish they would stop trying to do a weird gimmick for each game and just give us a good story for once.
It's a lot of fun to be Cappy.
You know, what are Mario's motivations? But hey, maybe we'll finally get that with the new Super Mario Brothers movie.
But I guess that leads to the big thing happening today, which is the Mario movie's releasing.
A mustache just like you.
Do you think I know every human being with a mustache wearing an identical outfit with a hat with the letter of his first name on it? Because I don't.
Bowser is coming. Together, we are going to stop that monster.
How? Look at us. We're adorable.
Oh, I got this. No problem.
Yes! Come on, Mario! Our big adventure begins now!
Get it off, get it off, get it off!
There's a huge universe out there. Whoa. With a lot of galaxies. They're all counting on us. No pressure.
The Chris Pratt Mario movie, which honestly, Chris Pratt's voice still kind of bothers me. It's not the worst, though.
Well, I do love me some Nintendo games, and Mario is my boy. I've never been a huge fan of the super cartoony, high-pitched Mario voice.
Super Mario Odyssey! I hate Mario's voice. Jesus Christ. That is, he has such a bullshit voice. It's so bad.
I know that's controversial. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love the guy who does the voice. He's great, and it totally worked for Super Mario 64.
I'm one of the few people that doesn't like Charlie Day as Luigi. That just doesn't sound like Luigi to me.
I think the thing that has me the most excited about the new Mario movie is the fact that Seth Rogen is playing Donkey Kong. And because the Kong family seems to have a pretty big part in this movie, I think there's a good chance that if it does well, we might actually get a Donkey Kong Country spinoff out of this, which I am so hyped for.
I feel like Anna Taylor-Joy is not a great fit for Princess Peach, but they're going with a more like warrior style of Peach in this movie. So maybe it'll work out for that.
The cast is incredible. Jack Black as Bowser, nuff said.
But Jack Black as Bowser is just sounding perfect. I want to hear more of that.
I think the whole cast is good.
People were complaining about Chris Pratt's voice for Super Mario.
It's a me, a Mario. That's not the voice. You'll have to wait to hear the voice.
As if Mario's own voice isn't the worst thing in the world.
I mean, that was iconic.
It is the worst thing in the world. It's not. I'm just being hyper-exaggerating here.
But I don't know. It just feels like the character in the games have become far less serious with each entry.
But it's not good, and it doesn't match. He shouldn't have a Mickey Mouse voice.
It's like as the graphics get better, he's gotten even more cartoony somehow. Back in the 16-bit era, Mario wasn't a super serious character or anything. He wasn't exactly an 80s action hero, but to me, he always felt like a regular guy who was thrown into a crazy situation, which is why I'm actually kind of excited for Chris Pratt's interpretation of the character in the new movie. After all, even in the old games, and in that terrible 90s movie that we'll be covering on Podcasters Disassembled, he sounded more like an Italian plumber from Brooklyn than, you know, Mickey Mouse huffing helium.
He's not f***ing Mickey Mouse.
But I digress.
And the promotions for the movie have been great.
I honestly couldn't be more excited about the new Mario movie. Like, it looks like they got it right. The poster's amazing. The trailers have all been frickin' fantastic.
The Super Bowl spot was this little like commercial for the Mario Brothers plumbing company that used the Mario rap from the old Mario Super Show.
We're the Mario Brothers and plumbing's a game. We're not like the others who get all the fame. When your sink is in trouble, you could call us on the double. We're faster than the others, you'll be hooked on the brothers. Huh.
Thank you, Super Mario Bros. It seems like the only thing you haven't drained is my bank account. For super service, call or text Super Mario Bros. Plumbing today at 929-55-MARIO or reach us on the World Wide Web at smbplumbing.com.
All the while, it's styled like a really bad local plumbing commercial, which gives me hope that they're really pulling from things that are from that 80s and early 90s time of Mario. And it makes me hope, and this is my biggest hope for the movie, is I want to see something as a throwback to Wart and Mouser.
One of the best things about this upcoming Mario movie is that if it does well, and it's almost guaranteed to, it means that we'll actually get other Nintendo properties on the big screen going forward. And they might actually get them right, you know?
Mouser is probably my favorite, like, boss from the Mario series. Just because he's, like, this little, like, chubby little mouse with, like, cool sunglasses. And throws bombs at Mario. Mario 2, being that black sheep game, has so much iconic things to me. Because it introduced Birdo. It introduced the Shy Guys. And the one thing we haven't seen much of since then is Mouser and Wart. Wart being the giant, like, toad that is the final boss of the game.
You know, Metroid, The Legend of Zelda. There's so many possibilities here, and I couldn't be more excited about it. Especially as an old-school Nintendo fan.
So, I don't know, I think it'd be great if there was some callback in the movie, like, it opens with Mario sleeping, and in his dream he's fighting like Wart and defeats Wart, and then he wakes up and that starts kind of his segment of the movie. That would be just a great throwback to the fact that Mario 2 was kind of styled as a dream that Mario was having between games.
It can't be worse than the last one.
They're brothers. They're plumbers.
Oh no. Mario! Luigi!
They're on the trail of a kidnapped princess.
Me the Rock! Come and get it, lizard breath!
Super Mario Brothers. This ain't no game.
Yeah, thanks for listening, guys. I hope everybody gets to go out and see the Mario movie this weekend. And I hope you guys subscribe to the Super Switch Club so you can hear all our other episodes. We've got some great stuff coming up, so be sure to follow us on Twitter to know anything about that. And I will see everybody next time. So this is Caslo25, heading out.
Yeah!
This has been a presentation
of the We Can Make This Work
Probably Network.
Follow us on Twitter
at Probably Work for more of our questionable content.
Also, we have a website called probablywork.com.
That's the game. Goodbye. Thanks for listening. Sorry, I don't know what happened there. I accidentally hit pause while I was laughing. I cut my own laugh off.
This is Ben from Dragoon Effect. I'm here to talk about Super Mario Odyssey. I kind of ran out of time to get this submission in, so it's going to be very short.
What is Mario? Is he human? I mean, he kind of is like a cartoon human. Is he a little goblin creature with a magic hat that lets him possess people? I don't know. I think Pauline is half goblin, though. Her and Peach both look cartoony, but they're kind of more human-like. So I don't know, man. I don't know. I'm just saying. In this world with a lot of seeming like sentient different monsters and stuff, Mario can't possibly be human. Ooh.
Hey, folks. This is Brett from Skeleton House here to talk about Mario Odyssey. Game's a 10 out of 10. Okay, that's all I got. See you guys later. Bye.